You're listening to Juno Afternoon with more from Christy Nami Erickson of Kindred Post. Hi, Christy.
Hello.
And we are now joined by Kendra Herget, the general manager for Kindred Post. Hi, Kendra.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And here with us also is author Juliana Hugh Pegues. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Juliana, would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Juliana Hugh Pegues. I can introduce myself two ways. And one is I went to Akwe School, Foy Dryden, and I'm a JDHS graduate class of 1987. That's one way I can introduce myself. And then the other way I can introduce myself is that, or maybe three ways, is that I'm an associate professor at Cornell University in the Department of Literatures and English. And I also teach in the American Indian and Indigenous Studies program and in the Asian American Studies program. And maybe the third way is to greet folks listening in Kleinaidi homelands and to say hello to you from both where I work and teach Kaikono homelands in Ithaca, New York. And today I am phoning in from Dakota homelands in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Gunashish, I love all of those introductions. That may be one of the best intros I've ever heard. Because we all have these multiple identities, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your book, which is titled Space-Time Colonialism, Alaska's Indigenous and Asian Entanglements. There's a lot to discuss right there in the title, which is awesome. So for starters, can you tell me what you mean by space-time colonialism?
Well, one, I have to take you to, I think, a cloudy, I don't think a rainy, maybe a cloudy, maybe sunny afternoon in Christy Nami Erickson's living room. And saying, I am really bad at titles, Christy, can you help me? And Christy's like, let's brainstorm. I'm really good at this. I'm an artist, I'm an organizer, I'm really good. Let's make like an idea board. And then I can talk about what the title sort of means. But I said, I'm thinking about, you know, already I had the ideas of space and time, and I can talk about that more in a little bit. But I was like, I need something that is not sort of overly academic, overly jargony, something that both captures the book, but is, but also sort of maybe captures my nerdy self. So we sort of just worked with the ideas of space, time, land, labor, Asian, indigenous, like we're kind of, you know, thinking about all kinds of things. And space, yes, Christy was like, what does this make you think of? What are other words, right? So really great at kind of, and the poet, I think, and Christy was like, let's spin on this a little bit. Let's take jumps with the ideas. And I was thinking about the space-time continuum, like it sort of went to a nerdy place. And that's where we landed, I think, on this idea of space-time colonialism as a title.
Christy, is that how you remember this happening?
Maybe not.
Let's get your side of the story.
Like, I'm really good at this. You should say. In fact, I think it was more like, don't ask me this because now I won't be able to unthink about it. This is what we're doing now. This is what we're going to do all afternoon now.
No, it's a great title. Well, let's talk a little bit about the book, the research. How'd you get into this area, Juliana? What made you want to write this book?
Well, as an Asian American, I was born in Taipei, Taiwan. My mom is Chinese and my dad's white. And my dad is the fourth generation white settler in Alaska. And growing up in Juneau, it's deeply personal interest. And when I was in graduate school, originally the kernel was to think about Asian American history in Alaska. Just that was sort of the basic idea, which really hasn't been done or written. And it became obvious really quickly that one, I couldn't even do that piece of it without sort of understanding Alaska Native lands, peoples, and knowledges. And from even the basics of Alaska Native communities, hold so much memory and history of Asian immigrants well beyond what's in the official archive. When I was first starting out talking to people, that alone was really clear. And then it became sort of, I don't think I can do this project if I don't kind of think about indigeneity and racialized immigration in the same frame. Like that's just how this has to be done. And from there, then I had a sort of a responsibility not only to sort of study Asian American studies, but also American Indian and Indigenous studies. And then, you know, when you're in Alaska, Southeast Alaska, as you start to do the research, I talk to people, I am an extrovert, and I would hear more stories. So this is sort of how the book sort of expanded in ways that some of the stories that I ground in the book, such as China Joe, I've heard all my life. And other stories such as, histories such as the Japanese immigrant photographer Shoki Kayamori, who lived in Yakutat for 30 years, that was a story that came to me from people talking and saying, you really should look at this, right? And then looking at his photographs and delving deeper into his history. And then in terms of, this is the joy, because this project is historical, but it also looks at cultural production. And I got to pick some of my favorite works. So to also then look at Ernestine Hayes's first memoir, Blonde Indian, and Nora Marks Dunhauer's poetry. So to actually sort of flesh this out also with Alaska Native authors and artists.
Can you say more about the term cultural production and why it's important?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And I like cultural, you could say art, but I think cultural production is important to me because it is both a labor and an economy. And I also think that there are cultural producers, right? Cultural workers. And so for me, it's important we can use art. And I also think that art sometimes has highbrow and elitist connotations, which are fine too, to assert that Alaska Native artists and Asian immigrant artists are also important artists in their own right. I have no problem with that, but I think cultural production for me is a more useful term in thinking through the connection to communities, to thinking more expansively and holistically to work and economies and importance, that it's actually part of how a community survives, that it's sustenance in a particular way that is as important as sort of the sustenance that we think of.
Sorry, you did not call on me, but I just have to chime in and say how good that was. That was so good. And I love that framing around artists as cultural producers, as community workers, as laborers in the cultural and community economy. So thanks for saying all of that, Juliana.
Of course.
What was your process for doing this research and then for organizing it, for piecing it together into a book?
Good question. I always think of it for the writers out there. It's like moving from the one page poem to an epic poem. At a certain point, you can't hold it all in your brain. It's moving to that scale of a project. So, it started with what I wanted to look at, both in terms of cultural work and cultural production and sort of the sort of lines of inquiry in terms of histories that I wanted to sort of follow. But I have a particular way of trying to think of, if I were to write a novel, it'd be very sort of like, oh, this chapter goes to a different character. Like, it's, if we think about that analogy. So I look at sort of stories and I try to go deep, but I also, when I run into sort of absences in the archive or what I call sort of elisions, right? So not only when Native or Asian people are missing, but also when their stories are diminished or minimized, when I hit sort of those blocks, when I was researching the histories, I would try to go to art and, go to authors. In the case of, say, Shoki Kayamori, he left, at this point, over nearly 950 photographs have been found or and restored, but he left no written record. So all we have are the photographs, right? And so that you have this rich, really what we call a rich sort of visual and artistic archive of his life and the life of a community over 30 years, including like really intimate photos of Alaska Native brotherhood and sisterhood. One of Don Bremner, who is a Yakutat Tlingit resident, who father was a close friend of Kayamori, says, he was actually part of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. He couldn't take these kinds of pictures if he wasn't part of this. And to see these deep, intimate photographs, but there's nothing sort of in the official archive, right, in the history on this man. And so to actually sort of look at the work. And so my process in some ways was circuitous, sort of meandering at times, but sort of always trying to follow, how can I start to make connections, even when it appears that the connections aren't there or they're absent in the way that we normally tell histories.
Which circles back to what you're describing about, the way the present is being created as well, right? It's not being the
present is not being written just by institutions who publish or by policies, public policies in the government. It's being written right now by cultural producers and people mm-hmm. on the ground who are living this life today.
Mm-hmm. Christy, what made Juliana as an author and her book a good fit for your store? You're hosting the book signing this Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm honored that Juliana would reach out to me and to Kindred Post to host something while she's just going to be in town here for a week, because we're friends, I assume. But what precedes our friendship is this shared interest, obviously shared passion and identity around activism and around Asian American identity and cultural production. I'm going to use phrase and thinking about where do our stories belong. And so Kindred Post, of course, has a, you know, part of the way we curate the gift shop is really about showcasing a diversity of stories. And some people make those stories through making jewelry, some people do it through weavings, and there's many authors. And of course, we have a lot of books that are really about how do we better understand this world that we're living in and bring in those diverse perspectives. And so of course we would be having, we would be stocking Juliana's book, and what a treat to also get to host her live and in person to be able to talk more and getting to have some of that conversation. You know, I think it's a real privilege that we get to host her for that.
Well, the interview's not over yet. It could very well go an hour. In addition to all that's inside the book, the artwork on the cover is also pretty special. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I am so lucky, blessed, honored. Crystal Worrell did an original piece for the cover of the book. And I'm sure folks are very familiar with Crystal as an artist and her work in Juneau. Clinkett, Athabascan, Yupik artist also has Russian and Filipino ancestry, which I think is important. And I had seen an older piece that Crystal had done from years ago that was really striking and looks similar in form and shape, but really different too. And Crystal was sort of like, that was a different time. I was a different artist. I want to make, and it's time for me to redo this piece. And I can describe it for folks, but it's the, and I apologies to Crystal and other artists who work in form line, but it is the salmon trout head, the ovoid, the sort of the foundational shape of form line, the salmon trout head. And it is that shape repeating, and sort of for me, how I look at it is it looks like the salmon trout heads are sort of falling on the page and sort of collecting at the bottom. There's movement on the page. And that's overlaid on top of a newspaper collage. And she asked, you know, at one point, do I need to find historical newspaper pieces, or can I use the present moment? Because so much is happening in the world that is not good. And I would love to chop that up, right? And use it as the collage and the background. Is that okay with you? And I said that was great. And to me, that has sort of another meaning about sort of the historical present. And then I think lastly with the newspaper, again, as I was saying, like in our discussion, as cultural production, right? Sort of the official record in newspapers has been sort of repurposed and no longer sort of legible in that same way, but is repurposed as the background in which sort of native form line predominates. So,
wow. I do wish we could talk more. We are running out of time. I'm going to stop here because I want to keep people wanting more. I want them to come to the book signing on Saturday and meet you and see the book for itself, see the cover, and ask their questions. I'm going to turn now to Kendra Herget, the general manager of Kindred Post, to tell us the details about the book signing this weekend.
Yeah, thank you. So the book signing is from 2 to 4 on Saturday, August 6th. And we're just gonna set up a table for Juliana, and people can come in and get their book signed. They can buy the book, they can chat with her. I mean, personally, one of my favorite things to do is like listen to people who are so passionate about a thing. So I'm just like so excited to hear Juliana talk for 2 hours, honestly, and I hope that people come join and hear her talk for however long she's talking, because it would be so fun to meet and chat with her. So that's what people can expect. You can drop in. You don't have to stay for the whole time, but you're welcome to stay for the whole time if you want.
Well, I just want to thank Juliana. Thank you too, Kendra and Christinami Erickson, for this wonderful conversation. It sounds like we're all excited for Saturday and the book signing happening at Kindred Post. Is there anything that anyone else would like to share before we say goodbye today?
No, just thanks for having me on, and I hope to see folks on Saturday.
Yeah, I hope so too. And Christy, you guys have a website where people can go if they missed any of the details.
We have event details on our Facebook page, so any of those can be brought up there.
Great. Well, thanks again for everyone for joining me today, and I hope you have a great turnout for your book signing on Saturday.
감사합니다.
그나시.
Thank you.